this is Roger Molina on Creative Disturbance. I'm delighted today to welcome Azra Aksamiya, Nada Shabooth, and Shafak Ahmad. And we're going to discuss a very interesting project that Azra has been conducting called Memory Matrix. And she just conducted a presentation and workshop here, which was both disturbing and exciting. So maybe you can tell us a little bit more about yourself first and then about the project.
Hi, my name is Azra Aksamiya. I'm an artist and architectural historian. I teach at MIT in the program called Art, Culture, and Technology. And I developed this project last year for the 100th anniversary of the MIT campus, celebrating on the one hand achievements of MIT community and its investment into the concerns and pressing crises of this world. And on the other hand, raising awareness about ongoing cultural destructions and humanitarian crisis in the Middle East. So this project, Memory Matrix, is a project that deals with preservation at the time of war and a role in that art can have in mobilizing new technologies and also cultural history to address these concerns. The project is a public space intervention that takes different forms in different locations. It's developed in conversation with local communities through transcultural workshops and collaborations with local partners, taking shape through what I call pixels, 20,000 of them made of neon plexiglass, laser cut with holes, outlining heritage that was destroyed in different parts of the world. And these outlines are designed by project participants.
Okay, very good. So we'll get a chance to dig deeper in the project and the very interesting experiences as you've deployed it in different kinds of ways. So maybe, Nada, you could tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
So my name is Nada Shabooth, and I am an art historian. I teach at University of North Texas, and I specialize in modern contemporary art from the Arab world and or the so-called Middle East. It's always problematic for me to define geography because of the politics aspect of it. And since actually 2003, I've been very involved in projects of preservation and bringing awareness to destruction of heritage in Iraq on every level.
Okay, Shafak, could you tell us a bit more about yourself and your connections to this concern?
Yes, I'm Shafak Ahmad. I'm an artist, and actually I also represent Islamic Art Revival Series, and this is one of our concerns also, preservation of heritage and actually communicating with other cultures and other faiths to build bridges and reach out to people and get together with people so that this is, I think, the best way and through art to reach out to other people. So it's very non-threatening way. And I think once people get together and talk to each other, then they find out more about other cultures and from other people from all around the world. And this has been very successful for us.
Okay, so maybe Azra, you can sort of help us on this core idea of the destruction of heritage with the complicated questions of it's going to be destroyed, what should be saved, who should save it.
So we live at the time when new technologies have been used to conduct unprecedented dimensions of destruction, and also we have possibilities to use technology to preserve and record what is being destroyed much faster than it has ever been possible before. And the question is now, how shall we do it? Who decides that at what point? And this project addresses this question by looking really at the context and also the social relationships that are connected to the artifacts themselves. For example, I come from Bosnia. A lot of our heritage has been destroyed 20 years ago during the war. And a lot of it has it also been restored. For example, the bridge in Mostar that was such an important symbol of coexistence that was deliberately destroyed. And it was restored, but without consideration of restoring the social bonds between Muslims and Catholics in this case in Mostar. It's a kind of empty symbol, you know.
Interesting.
You cannot just restore a monument without thinking about legal framework
and who rebuilds
social
it
bonds and who rebuilds and what it actually means in society. Yeah. And this is something that I would like to raise awareness about. Even in the efforts of restoration, we need to think about, you know, it's not enough just to think about buildings, but we need to think about connecting people and those values associated and embodied
in those artifacts. Yeah, Shafak, you want to jump in on the destruction question? Do you, any particular? I think one of the concerns you raised in the workshop maybe would be interesting about your country.
Yeah, it's because the way where Pakistan is located. You know, I'm originally from Pakistan. The geographical location, it's very important for the that part of the world, and it's always in the midst of world politics. And I think a lot of it has to do with the, you know, the nuclear program that they have. Otherwise, it probably would not be existing right now. And so my concern is that, you know, with new politics in the U.S. and all the politics around the world, I am concerned about actually the existence of our country and, you know, and the Third World War that might be triggered because of that, because as also a lot of the countries are getting nuclear weapons. And I let's see, you know, how this plays out from U.S. point
okay.
of view.
Okay, Nada, yeah. You want to jump in?
Yeah, I just want to add that when it comes to destruction, I mean, then and the question that, you know, Ezra raises continuously with the project of, mm-hmm. you know, why should, you know, we care? And I bring the example of the year leading to the war against Iraq, and even after the war, the invasion of Iraq, the whole sort of media hype on heritage as a humanities heritage, looking at Mesopotamian heritage. And every time I gave, for example, a lecture on the Iraqi Museum of Modern Art, I am told once, you know, I schedule a lecture and I go there and someone will say, you meant the National Museum, right? I'm like, no, I meant the Modern Art Museum, because there is a modern heritage. So when does heritage, you know, become humanities heritage? When does it become just a national, which kind of has a lot of a level of politics involved in it? Because, for example, with the, you know, different playing of politics in Iraq, the head of Abu Ja'far al-Mansur, the Abbasid caliph who built Baghdad, the round city, was destroyed because it was seen as threatening to now the new relations with Iran, good relations with Iran, since he oppressed, you know, the Shiites. Or, for example, a very famous monument by Saddam Hussein, who sketched it himself, which has actually, you know, sort of molds of his arms, but also uses all the helmets from the fallen Iranian soldiers from the Iraq-Iran war that was part of that monument. You know, when does this become something that, you know, we preserve or not, particularly in, like, after the invasion of Iraq, there was that policy of de-Ba'athification, which meant some monuments are no longer heritage of the country because they were tainted by politics.
Okay, let me extend your argument and throw the ball back to Azra. So one of the phrases you used was about the mobilization of new technologies. And in the workshop we had some born digital natives who were worried about the preservation of their childhood digital heritage. And so the new technologies are not only bringing new ways of destroying heritage, but new ways of preserving it. And you made the other ironic comment, which is in many cases, the people that are now coming to help preserve and rebuild are part of the same countries that were part of the problem that destroyed them in the first place. And so at what point, you know, who decides what should be rebuilt and which help is acceptable? So you want to unpack a little bit the complication of preserving and rebuilding.
Yeah, so one is, I mean, maybe also to the point of technology in terms of, you know, like we have the side on the side of destruction, the circulation of images of destruction that, I mean, why do we need to, you know, how do we get first to hear about these destructions? we need to be wary about the politics of images, and partly that these images were produced by those who are destroying heritage, and they are using our investment and appreciation of cultural heritage as a point of departure to provoke some form of retaliation, and this is a kind of form of new form of warfare. Because we care so much about heritage,
they use heritage
being,
as
it is being targeted, exactly. The second point is then who gets to rebuild and who has the skills, access to technology, but also you know, access to money and funds. And there have been trends already in the context of the Syrian destruction that, you know, a lot of Western institutions, they want to help, but there is a two-sided, you know, face to this agenda. And if you are keeping the technology and information only to yourself, I mean, you start claiming ownership over heritage that belongs either to these people or to the entire world. Second is, if it's open source, this is another complication. A lot of archaeologists are very careful of what they put online as important heritage, because in many cases, once you declare something as valuable, it becomes threatened for looting or further destruction. So even in that realm, we have to be cautious.
So visibility in itself makes it dangerous.
Exactly. And then the third is, you know, claiming expertise. If we are the ones who have the tools and the money to restore, should we be doing that? Or whether shall we be thinking about sharing resources and skills with those who don't have access to technology and whose heritage we are also talking about? So there have been, you know, a lot of controversies over the restoration of the Palmyra Arch and Western institutions taking over that realm, claiming expertise as if we are the only ones here who would be, you know, in charge.
And inevitably they then get involved in what is going to be rebuilt or preserved, right? So it's not a neutral,
exactly.
Neutral technology. One of the things that I just wanted to go into, it sort of came up a little bit, and I think your work in was it the camps in Jordan, I think? The issue of intergenerational communication and transmission, because one of the things that's happening is the rate of change of many of these things is such, I mean, it used to be the generational timescale was sort of a timescale of many things. but suddenly, we're dealing with situations which are happening quickly enough that intergenerational discussion doesn't always take place. And I think you made the comment that some of the children that you were working with in the camps didn't understand why you were so worried about it.
I know, this was in Palestine.
Palestine, yeah.
Well, you know, people have developed different relationship to their heritage, and especially when they've lived in a certain city and or a village and have been expelled from it. It's a very different reality for that generation than for kids who grew up in a refugee camp and that refugee camp became their heritage and their reality. So in many cases I've encountered young people who just didn't have any relationship to these sites where their parents or grandparents were coming from, and also because, you know, there was no immediate engagement with that history. And also they were occupied with other forms of other interests. Like they just want to have a funky life and listen to the same type of music that our kids listen to here. So how do you make them aware of that? Because it does matter at some point. This reality that they live now has become an accepted status quo. That kind of ethnic cleansing that has been going on for decades becomes acceptable situation. And so how do we reinsert that memory without necessarily just a nostalgic outlook? And that, I think, could be an educational process. So what we did in Ramallah was to have older generation be interviewed by younger generation and to share stories, and then the young students were designing these stories and translating them into drawings, and there was a form of, you know, connecting.